This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here on episode 34 of the 90 Feet From Home Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are presented by Underdog Fantasy, and I am your host, Joe Orico. You guys can check me out over on Twitter at JoeOrico99. That's where I post all of my newest work, whether it be these podcasts, any articles that I write, notes that go out directly onto Twitter. You guys can check all of that out at JoeOrico99. We also just hit our 100th post on Patreon over the weekend. I really can't tell you how much I appreciate all the support we've seen over there. We're well over 400 members since we started less than 2 months ago. So it's really been great to see. If you guys are interested in seeing more of my fantasy baseball work or supporting the cause or both, check out the link in the description of the episode. We're doing extended quick hit notes. If you like my notes on Twitter, I think you'd really like the extended versions. We're answering all your questions. We're doing those daily Q&As. We have updated rankings. We have a starting pitcher chart that goes out every single day. So there's a lot of fun stuff for you guys to be checking out there. In the description of the episode, you can also find the link in my Twitter. So today we're going to be going through the weekend, talking about the big news and notes, a couple suspensions we are going to have to talk about here off the top before getting into some player performances. We'll talk about some of the more added and drop players of the day later on in the show, and then we'll talk about a couple of two-star pitchers this week that I like as well. We got James Anderson coming on the show tomorrow if you guys are looking for more prospect stuff. We did a show last week with Eric Cross going through prospect hitters tomorrow. We're doing prospect slash rookie pitchers with James Anderson tomorrow afternoon. So make sure you guys are subscribing, getting that one into your feed right when it does come out. But like I mentioned, there's a couple suspensions to talk about. Let's start off with Edwin Diaz. This was Sunday Night Baseball. Edwin Diaz got kicked out of the game because he had a little bit too much of whatever on his hand. I think there's a problem with the way we check for this, first of all. It's all subjective. The umpires are just feeling the hand and saying, this feels a little too sticky to me. This one feels okay. This one's a little, like, it just feels like there should be a better system in place where they have, and I guess it's not really logistically possible. I mean, maybe they could. It would delay the games, and their whole thing the last couple of years has been expediting these games, getting them done in under 2.5 hours if they can. But if they had some kind of kit or something, or you know, something that they swab on the hand, and if it turns a certain color, then it's too much. I don't know. I'm not a science guy, but I feel like there should be a better way they go about this than just, yeah, your hand feels too sticky to me. That's a 10-game suspension. 10-game suspension for a relief pitcher is pretty significant. For a starting pitcher, that's at worst 2 starts, and if the team, you know, manages things correctly, maybe there's a bullpen day, maybe they call a guy up, you might only miss 1 start from that. You know, 10 games for reliever, that might be 5-6 appearances, maybe 4-6 appearances, anywhere in that range, where Edwin Diaz is not going to be available now for the Mets. It's not looking like a great season for the Mets, but they're kind of in the chase for that wild card as well as everybody else in the National League. Everybody except the Marlins and the Rockies actually has a chance. This is probably not going to help very much. It's probably not going to do much good for the Mets. They have Reed Garrett who will probably step in there. Maybe Ottavino takes a couple, but it's not great. In terms of, like, Edwin Diaz, was he cheating? Was he not cheating? He's not a guy who relies on massive spin. Those are typically the guys that you see doing this to get a little bit of an edge on their off-speed pitches. Edwin Diaz relies on his 100-mile-an-hour fastball. You know, there's nothing you're really going to add there with a bit of rosin or a bit of glue or whatever the hell they put on the ball or their hands. He's not the typical candidate you'd expect to get booked for this kind of thing. He's not a guy who throws 4 different off-speeds and all that. It's just one fastball and he throws a slider. Like, I think that it's probably just maybe it was the weather-related something or it was a little, I don't know, honestly. I don't know anymore. Every time an umpire feels one of these hands, they say it's the stickiest hand we've ever felt. They said, I forget who was umping the game, who was the crew chief, but he said, like, we test thousands of these hands. We touch them all the time. This one felt different. Maybe there was something there. Maybe Edwin Diaz is trying to gain a bit of an advantage. I'm not going to really read too much into it just because I don't think the process really makes a lot of sense. If there's a little bit extra heat in the air, maybe it's going to make it a little more sticky or something. I don't know. I think we need to really rework the way that they do this testing, because 10 games for Edwin Diaz is pretty significant. If you're rostering him in fantasy, it sucks. You just got him back. He's been looking good, and now he's gone for another couple weeks. I think it's a decent time to just at least see what the market is for him. There was a bunch of drops of Edwin Diaz today. Looking at Yahoo, 1,350 drops. So probably by the end of the day, we're going to see about 1,500 or so. That's generally how it works. That's kind of a lot. He's been good since he's come back. He's a guy who is arguably, just based on talent, the best closer in baseball, at least the top three or four, at absolute worst. And we've seen him fall to 91% on Yahoo, which doesn't sound significant. You're like, okay, he's still above 90%, whatever. It's a guy who was 99% rostered to start the season with a bullet. So we're talking about almost 1 in 10 leagues now where he's sitting on the waiver wire. It's going to be more shallow leagues, but if you're seeing that, I wouldn't hesitate to pick him up. And you're probably also getting another little bit of a buy low window here, because now there's going to be questions about, oh, was he cheating and blah, blah, blah. And maybe he was. But again, he's not a guy who really relies on that. So I'm going to say it's probably nothing you need to worry about performance-wise. He's been good for quite a while now. I don't think these guys get checked. They know where they're going to get checked. So I don't really think Edwin Diaz went out for the ninth yesterday and did this diabolical thing where he just went and cheated. I think it's nothing to really read into. I think he's a great buy low, especially because you're looking at the season-long 4.70 ERA. A lot of people are like, okay, it's not really that great. And a lot of people do just look at season-long numbers. We break things down here. But a lot of people, if you're playing in the average league, if you just look at the average comments on a post on Twitter from anybody who does fantasy content, you're going to see some people who are like, well, Pablo Lopez sucks because of his ERA, or because, you know, Randy Arozarena is a terrible baseball player because of his batting average. And people just sometimes don't look a little further down into these players. Edwin Diaz is a great pitcher. There's nothing really to be concerned about in the long term in terms of how his performance is going to look, or anything like that, really. So if there is any bit of a buy low window, if you're seeing him on the wire in shallow leagues, I wouldn't hesitate to pick him up. Let's talk about the other one. This one's a little closer to home for me, and this is Aurelvis Martinez, who was booked for, I forget what the name of it was, Region something is the name of the drug, 80-game PED suspension for Aurelvis Martinez. He'd been called up, he'd played one game, went 1-for-3, and he was mostly just riding the pine. Not even mostly, he was exclusively riding the pine other than that. The Blue Jays, first of all, why call the guy up if you're just going to sit him around? They did this earlier in the year with Barger. They sent him back down, brought him back up. It happened last year with David Schneider, even though he was hitting the ball like crazy and they weren't playing him every day. And just an inept team, first of all. But now you also have to deal with Aurelvis Martinez being, I don't know, there's one of two options here. Either he's a cheater or he's a complete fool. Those are the two. There's no middle ground. Those are two black and white options. Either Aurelvis Martinez was taking something to try and gain a bit of an advantage, and as somebody who is pretty much strictly just a power batter, there's not a lot of batting average upside. There's no speed. It's essentially just Aurelvis is here to hit home runs, and whenever that happens to a guy like this, you got to start to wonder a little bit why he has been so powerful. It's very possible that what his story he gave is true, and that was fertility problems. His wife or his girlfriend or whoever is having fertility problems, and they're trying to have a child, and so this drug was prescribed to him, and he took this drug, and now he tested positive. I would argue, yeah, the doctor's an idiot, for sure, if that's the case, and the doctor prescribed something without knowing how it was going to show up on a test of a professional athlete, then that's the doctor's fault. But at the same time, if you're Aurelvis Martinez, you got to be pretty sure what you're putting into your body is not going to impact you as a professional athlete. I think that he's pretty stupid. I think we need more information, first of all, but I don't think I'm going to change my opinion on the fact that Aurelvis probably should have, not probably, he should have done more research before he's taking drugs, and then I believe he took it in the Dominican Republic. You need to be careful. You know, these guys, there's a lot at risk, there's a lot at stake, and maybe Aurelvis didn't do anything wrong, but the optics now forever are that he's a cheater. The optics forever, and even for guys like Noel V. Marte, I don't know if he'll ever be able to beat that. Fernando Tatis, it's always going to be something that hangs around 20 years, 15 years from now when we're having conversations of, is Fernando Tatis a Hall of Famer? There are going to be people who say, well, you know, he had the PED suspension, and that'll always, always, always follow your name. It's impossible to remove. I'm not 100% sure about whether it is the cheating or the stupidity aspect, but either way, yeah, Relvis is somebody that I don't know what we're going to see going forward. First of all, he's going to have that kind of tainting on him. But we're also talking about somebody who just strictly was a power bat, pretty much. That's all he was getting called up to do. He's not getting called up because he's a great fielder or because he's a batting average guy or because he can steal bases. He does none of that stuff. It's strictly for power. And if the power is now called into question, then I think we have to really wonder what Aurelvis Martinez is going to look like with a clean system. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. Maybe I'm not reading enough into it. But now his entire performance, his entire career is going to be called into question. If he comes back next season and he's clean and he's passing tests and he's a 30 home run hitter, then I will apologize to Aurelvis Martinez. But as of right now, it's a little bit fishy. The story about the fertility, it always seems like when the guys get caught, they have a nice story. You know, Noelvi Marte blamed it on some bad food, you know, taking anabolic steroids or whatever it is because of a bad ham sandwich. You know, there's always these excuses that people have. I was maybe a little harsh on Twitter yesterday. I called Aurelvis a loser, and maybe that was a little bit too much. I'm a pretty pissed off Jays fan these days, and I'm not really willing to give the benefit of the doubt to somebody who's going to get caught taking PEDs. It's a tricky situation. I deleted it because I was probably a little bit too strong in my wording, but I'm not impressed. I'm thoroughly unimpressed with Aurelvis, whether it is because he's cheating or because he's not doing all the things he should to ensure that he's going to stay on the field. You're taking an experimental drug? Maybe make sure that that's not going to show up on a test at some point. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. You got to be a little bit more careful. So I don't think that there's much to say anymore about him. He's obviously a drop. We said that last week before any of this happened. Aurelvis was a drop. He's not somebody that needs to be rostered. He's not playing. Again, it's just the power. Maybe that translates immediately to the big leagues. Maybe it doesn't. He was a risky pickup at the time. Jumped up to 20% on Yahoo. He's now down to 4%. I imagine that will be zero over the next day or so. But let's start breaking down the actual performances. Not any of this crazy shenanigan business. Let's start talking about Paul Skenes. I said it last week or 2 weeks ago or maybe both times when he pitched. Very hard to start a recap without putting Paul Skenes at the top of it these days. We got 7 innings of 1-run ball with 8 strikeouts and 1 walk. 29% CSW, 13.3% swinging strike rate. He was sitting 99.4 on the day. His fastest pitch was over 101 miles an hour, and it was on his final pitch of the day. That's so impressive when you're able to, you know, it's like the Justin Verlander method. You work up and then throughout the start, you're actually gaining a couple of ticks. And then by the end of it, you're actually pumping some of your fastest pitches. We're looking at a 2.14 ERA, a 0.99 whip, and maybe the most impressive stat, 61 strikeouts to 8 walks. The conversation we've been having here on the show about Paul Skenes is, where is he going to go in 2025 drafts? Is he a top 10 pick? In terms of pitchers, is he a top 10 pitcher? Is he a top 5 pitcher? The conversation is shifting towards, is Paul Skenes going to be the first pitcher taken in 2025 drafts?
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
I think that if he's healthy, he finishes out the year, we see 120, 130 innings, and we see this relative pace sustaining, hard to see him going much farther than like SP3 or SP4, really. It's tricky to do these kind of exercises in the middle of the year because you never know who's going to be healthy, and that's kind of the main one. Who is actually going to still be standing next year at this time, or not at this time, but a couple months before this time. You know what I'm saying. Who's going to be there in March, the draft? It's tricky to say that in the previous June, but Tyler Glasnow is probably going ahead of him if he's healthy, maybe. Zach Wheeler, maybe Tarek Skubal. Those are the only guys that I think have a legit chance to go ahead of him. That's kind of it. Like, maybe if Chris Sale, if he stays healthy, I don't think people are going to take him that high because there's always going to be the worry. Like, I think there's a decent chance that Paul Skenes goes off the board as the number one starting pitcher next year. It's getting kind of hard to fight it at this point. The numbers are just so impeccable. He truly is a once or twice in a generation type of pitcher. I think Skenes is, for dynasty purposes, probably the number one starting pitcher. I'm not a huge dynasty person, but I would imagine he is probably the number one guy. So there's nothing really not to like here other than the potential for the Pirates shutting him down later on in the season. That's something that's going to probably affect us to some extent. Even if it's a few starts, it's not going to be what we want to see, but abbreviated outing, phantom IL, whatever they do, we might see some bullshit in August and September. But I think in terms of 2025, Paul Skenes is, especially, you know, the kid gloves might not be off, but loosen the straps on them a little bit, I think we're going to see some pretty special stuff from Paul Skenes in 2025 and beyond. This is a generational type of talent, and I think there's a good chance he goes as the first pitcher in 2025 drafts. I would like to wish a hearty welcome back to Pablo Lopez. 8 shutout innings with 14 strikeouts and 1 walk, 31% CSW, 18.6% swinging strike rate. Yes, it was the Athletics. Nobody else has struck out 14 Athletics this season. And it's not like you can look at this and say, well, if it was any other team, it would have been a bad start. Like, no. You know, I've mentioned this before on the show, but I'm the producer of the Leading Off podcast, The Fantasy Pros, and I was going through today's show listening to Joe Pisapia and the Welsh talking about what the equivalent of that would be against, like, a good team. And it's probably, like, 8 or 9 strikeouts against a good team still. So let's say he faced the Braves or the Brewers or, a fairly potent offense, and he gave you this type of line with 9 strikeouts. And maybe it was 7 innings instead of 8. You'd still say he's back. You'd still say the same words that we're using here. I think that given the vitriol towards Pablo Lopez in the fantasy community, if you drafted him, you're very, very angry at what he's done so far this season. And the fact that this game came against the A's, you might still be able to buy in some cases. Some people might be like, I don't know about this. It seems like it's not going to stick. Hell, I mean, I saw Frank Stanfill, our friend who was on the show a couple weeks ago, just tweeted something similar to what I tweeted about, like, Pablo Lopez is back. And my God, the people answering back are just like, no, it's not. He's not back. The ERA for the month is still bad, whatever. People have these perceptions that are hard to break. And once you get locked into a player take, it's very hard to shift off of that take. If you hated a player last year, it's pretty hard to fall in love with them this year. And even if it's just half a season, Pablo Lopez has been screwing you for 3 months of the year, even one good start. That person who has it might say, I'm going to sell him after this good start. I'm done with Pablo Lopez. But you're not selling him for full value, and you wouldn't have to pay full value to acquire him. So I do think, and it's not going to be every league, there's going to be some people who say, all right, Lopez is back. The market is closed. Shop's closed for the day. But there's also going to be other people who are still willing to trade him based on the still very high ERA, the fact that this came against Oakland. I think that there is still a bit of a window here. A lot of people are saying that it's fully closed, the buy low. It's mostly closed, but it's not fully closed. I think Pablo Lopez is an easy top 20 pitcher rest of season at worst, and if you're getting him for any kind of discount, I'd happily be doing it. Let's talk Christopher Sanchez, my boy Chris Sanchez, who now has the second-best ERA in the National League after yesterday's start, dropped down to 2.67. We got 7 shutout innings against Arizona, who is one of the better teams in baseball hitting off of lefties. 119 WRC+. As of yesterday, they were the 6th-best team against left-handed pitchers. Chris Sanchez gave you 7 shutout innings. He's been doing this kind of thing all season, 2.67 ERA, 1.28 whip through 15 starts. He's been available in way too many leagues. We've talked about him as somebody who's like in the mid-60s, low-60s, even at times dropping into the 50s in terms of roster rate. We're now up to 75% with Chris Sanchez. If there was any worry before, it was kind of, if anything, it was his command. His command was, earlier in the season, really bothering me. after seeing a 4% walk rate last year, we kind of saw, I mean, as of right now, it's still 6.9, but it was like 8-9% for a while. But he has really, really gotten better there in terms of issuing the free passes. There were so many of them to start the season. Every start was two or three. And now it seems like every start, like maybe there's one walk, but he has really improved in that department. The ERA estimators are all excellent for Sanchez. In the team context, couldn't really be better pitching for Philadelphia. So if you're still seeing him out there, even in shallow leagues, he's up to 75% on Yahoo. I would be taking a chance on him if you're seeing him out there. Not even taking a chance at this point. Halfway through the year, he's second in the National League in ERA. I know we don't read too much into ERA, but when all the supporting metrics are good as well, there's a lot to like here with Christopher Sanchez. Would I like a few more strikeouts? We would like that for everybody. But we're still talking about really good strikeout minus walk numbers. We're talking about a 312 xFIP, 249 FIP, not getting lucky in terms of batted ball luck or stranding runners. This is just a good pitcher. He is doing good things for you this season, and I think he can continue to do so down the stretch. Just got a nice new contract as well, so always nice to see a guy after a new deal. Show the team why they gave him that deal. It was a good start for Sanchez. A great start for Sanchez, considering Arizona does so well against lefties. Excuse me. Let's talk about Jake Irvin. You want to talk about great starts? This was a masterpiece. And I kind of hesitated on using the word masterpiece, but six innings of one-run ball with 10 strikeouts and one walk. Yes, it was in Colorado, or it was against Colorado, but 32 – actually, no, it was in Colorado, I believe, unless I'm losing my mind there, but I believe this was a Coors Field game, unless I've just completely lost it. No, this was a Coors. 22%, 22.4% swinging strike rate is a massive, massive total for anybody, anywhere. I'm not looking at the swinging strike leaderboards, like single-game leaderboards, but that's one of the higher numbers we've seen from starting pitchers this season. Jake Irvin has a 3.13 ERA and a 1.08 whip. He's not getting lucky. A lot of the time, a guy comes out of nowhere. Jake Irvin, who was, I don't want to say he was awful last season. He had a 4.61 ERA, but he was not great. And now we're looking at a sparkling ERA. The walks are just gone at this point. Maybe not fully gone, but from a guy who was well into the double digits for walk rate each of the past couple of seasons, or 2023 in major league level and at the AAA level, a lot of walks we were seeing from him. Now he's down at 5.4%. 16.6 strikeout minus walk rate is a big boy number. You're looking at the 313 ERA, and it's also supported by the 356 xFIP. He has a 371 Sierra. This is not a guy who is probably going to have like a low 3 ERA or a sub 3 ERA, but mid to high 3s, like 3.5 to 3.75 type of ERA going forward. I think that he's a really strong asset in pretty much all leagues, unless you're talking about really shallow formats. I got a question yesterday from somebody. It was a Patreon question, and the guy's like, should I drop Zach Eflin? And I was like, well, Zach, like, I don't think so. But then he shows me the rest of his roster. It's a 10-team league, and it's like, Jesus Christ, you got, like, Logan Gilbert, Jared Jones, you got Glasnow, Crochet. It's like these crazy stacked rosters in 10-team leagues sometimes. So maybe there you don't have room for Jake Irvin, but I think in most cases – you should be trying to do what you can to get him on your team. That kind of depth in a 12-teamer is really, really, really excellent for you. And even in 10-team leagues, I think you can make the argument for Jake Irvin. He's a 105th-ranked player for the season as a whole, top 60 over the last month. There's a lot to like here, and I'd be picking him up if you're still seeing him out there on waiver wires. Let's talk about Yusei Kikuchi. He got drop-kicked by the Guardians yesterday. Two innings, eight hits, four earned runs, three strikeouts, and a walk. 29% CSW and an 11.9% swinging strike rate. Toronto's had a bit of a tricky schedule as of late. That's something to keep in mind here. We're facing all the toughest opponents in the American League, it seems. So I do want to keep that in mind with Kikuchi because he is somebody who was dropped a bunch. Over the last several weeks, he's actually been a pretty popular drop. And today, we're not going to talk about him as one of the most dropped players of the day in our segment later, but plenty of drops for Yusei Kikuchi, down to 57% of his. More than I was expecting, really. I think that this is a situation where you look at the schedule, you look at the changes he's made this season, and you think, okay, I'm not going to read too much into this because he's a lot better than what we've seen recently. The ERA is 4 on the dot, which is not what you want to see. Every one of his ERA estimators is well below that. He's a 3.52 Sierra, 3.34 xFIP, 3.52 FIP. He's still striking out a solid 24.2% of batters, with the best walk rate we've ever seen from him at 5.6. He is very close to that elite 20% strikeout minus walk rate threshold we talk about. I've talked about it and written about it a lot, but if you see anybody even sniffing that, 17, 18, 19%, the odds are they're a very good pitcher. I know it sounds very oversimplified, but that's kind of the main thing that you look at when you're like, if you want to do a quick evaluation of a pitcher, see how good they are, how bad they are. You go to Fangraphs, you look at the advanced section, and you look at strikeout minus walk rate. Actually, no, it's not in the dashboard on Fangraphs on the player pages. You got to go down to the advanced section. You look at K minus BB percent. If you see anybody who's over 15, 16%, the odds are they're very, very good. Once you're pushing the 20% range, and you're talking about two consecutive years too, you say it was 19% on the strikeout minus walk rate last season, doing the same things essentially in terms of his K and walk rates. It's not like they've changed drastically in any which way. 25, 24 in terms of strikeouts, 6, and now 5 in terms of walks. He's the same guy. I think it was just a rough stretch, and I don't think there's a reason to really be cutting him the way that we've seen, not just today, but over the last couple weeks, people kind of giving up on a really good pitcher that they shouldn't be giving up on just yet. Let's talk Alec Burleson. This is one of the best two-game stretches you are going to see from any player in 2024, what he did this weekend. 5-for-8 with 4 runs, 2 homers, 7 ribbies, and 3 stolen bases. That would be a good week. That would be a good 2 weeks for some players. He did that over 2 days, over 24-hour stretch. For the year as a whole, Alec Burleson, he's hitting .285 with 31 runs, 12 homers, 32 ribbies, and 5 steals. He's the number 2 hitter every day in the Cardinals lineup. And we're talking about a guy who is pushing top 100 overall value, top 30 over the last month. He's jumped up quite a bit. He is among the most added players we're seeing today. But my God, why is it taking so long? He's up to 60% now, but he's been in the 40s pretty consistently. He's given you good production all around. Is he a .285 hitter? I don't think so. We're probably going to see that come back down a little bit, but he's going to be a good source of runs, good source of power with some chip-in speed. We saw him steal 2 bases yesterday. Just out of the blue, but you're getting value from Alec Burleson from all kinds of different places right now. Not to mention the first base outfield eligibility is super, super sweet. I think he's a no-brainer ad where you're still able to find him. I really do. Offense is very tricky to come by. Somebody giving you 5 categories should not be left on waiver wires. And I'm going to talk about his teammate here as well, Mason Winn, because he is also severely undervalued. I don't know what he needs to do to prove to people that he is worthy of being like at least 50% roster guy, probably more. Mason Winn right now, did he go up today at all? He went up 1% today. Maybe it's the shortstop thing. If there's anything, it might be that, because shortstop is a deeper position. But we're talking about a guy who's hitting .300. He got 31 runs, 4 homers, 27 ribbies, and 8 stolen bases. If you're looking for widely available leadoff hitters on the waiver wire, there aren't really any, let alone ones who give you good batting average assets, hit at the, like, giving you kind of just everything. Like, there's nothing that he's really lacking in so much to this point. The power, only having 4 home runs, is not, it's what you expect. That's why I'm not saying he's lacking. The power is not there. He's like a 2-3% barrel rate guy. You're probably going to get 10 home runs at best, but it's going to come with 70-plus runs, 50 to 60 ribbies, a close to .300 batting average, and 20-plus steals. That's the kind of asset I don't want to leave on the waiver wire in any formats. I get that shortstop's tricky. You might have a guy that you don't want to drop or whatever, but put him in the utility spot. Do what you can to get him in your lineup right now, because he is just killing it this season. Mason Winn has been phenomenal. Let's talk about Connor Wong, who actually just got placed 5 minutes before I started the show. He was put on the paternity list. It looks like his wife's going to have their, I don't know if it's a first child or what's the deal here, but Connor Wong's going to be out for a couple days. That's not any reason to be dropping him or whatever. He's batting .330, folks. Connor Wong, if he qualified, would be, and if it wasn't for incredible stuff that Stephen Kwan is doing. Although, is Kwan qualified? Maybe Kwan's not quite qualified yet either because of the time that he missed. Connor Wong is up there in terms of the best batting averages we've seen this season. Not to mention a .390 on base and a .480 slug. 26 runs, 7 homers, 29 ribbies, and 3 stolen bases while playing nearly every single day. That's as much as you can hope for from a catcher. He's not going to play 6-7 times a week, but you're getting like 5 games a week from Connor Wong. He's still available in so many leagues. I know you're going to have to miss him for the next couple days, and that's kind of annoying, but we're talking about a guy who's 59% rostered, despite being, at this point, let's see where he ranks in terms of catchers, in terms of overall production for the season. He's got to be pretty high up there. According to Yahoo, he is the number 5-ranked catcher for the season. This is not a guy who should be sitting out on waiver wires. I know a lot of people are dealing with a churn of catchers, and You're kind of just streaming in a guy if he has a good week, and you're going with Patrick Bailey, Jonah Heim, or whoever that these guys look the hot hands of the weekend. Those are like Patrick Bailey, Jonah Heim are really good catchers, should probably be rostered in most cases. But when you're getting this kind of batting average, you're getting this kind of batting average and some speed from a catcher, I don't think there's any reason to justify not picking him up and starting him right now. I think at worst, he's a top 10 catcher. If you have Adley Rutschman, William Contreras, Will Smith, okay, there's nothing you can really do here. I wouldn't really want to start a catcher in your utility spots or whatever. But I think if you are trotting out one of those bottom-of-the-barrel type of catchers and you're seeing Wong out on waiver wires, and you probably are based on his roster rate, I would not hesitate to pick him up there. Let's talk about Jesus Sanchez. I wrote him up earlier this week. I love when players do this. I wrote about his differences between his expected and his actual stats. And then we got a 3-home-run week from him. Gotta love that. Gotta love that. When they make me look smart, I gotta love these players. But there are still some roadblocks here for Jesus Sanchez in terms of shallow league viability. First of all, that park stinks. It stinks, 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 especially for a guy who's going to rely on power. That park is going to suppress power. Jesus Sanchez, if he's playing in most parks in baseball, as an everyday player, should be like a 25 home run guy. In Florida, that's probably going to be under 20, or maybe he gets to 20 if he's able to heat up a little bit. But that park is going to kill what actually is really, really nice power from him. 12.8% barrel rate, 53 hard hit. If you're looking at the expected stats versus the actual, it's a 287 expected batting average, a 519 expected slug compared to just a 241 actual batting average and a 384 slug. It's somebody where the circumstances around him really make it hard to roster him, but in deeper leagues and 15-teamers, I think that he's absolutely worth it. You're getting a little bit of speed. You're getting very good power, and I'm hoping for a trade, in all honesty. If Jesus Sanchez ever gets traded somewhere out of Miami, and like, oh my God, if he ever got traded to Colorado or to Cincinnati, my heart would probably stop. I'd be so excited. What we're seeing in Miami is like the worst possible scenario for him, and he's still like a 15-team guy. End of season, we're probably looking at about, like I said, maybe 17. Maybe he gets a 20 homers. Let's call it 20, give him the benefit of the doubt. And he gives you 10 steals. He's hitting 250. Counting stats are not going to be that great. But 20 and 10, or even if it's 18 and 10 with a decent batting average, it's not quite going to cut it in shallow formats. But in any 15-team league, if you're playing NL only, if you're seeing Jesus Sanchez out there on the wire, I wouldn't hesitate to pick him up. This is a guy with a massive upside. And, you know, the way that they are trading players, I wouldn't expect them to get off of him, a 26-year-old guy who has a lot of potential. But the Marlins are going to be selling. Maybe he gets sold. Either way, 3% rostered on Yahoo. Not to say he's somebody you got to be jumping to pick up right now, unless you are in those deeper leagues. But even if you're playing in a 12-teamer, I would just kind of keep an eye here and see what happens with Jesus Sanchez over the next couple of weeks. We're actually very close to the trade deadline. It's about a month away, maybe 5 weeks away. I'm not expecting him to get traded, but it's something to keep an eye on. If he does, and he's going to a team that doesn't have like a clear block for him, like if there's a space for him to play in the outfield, then I think you should be really, really jumping on the potential there. For right now, I think most of you guys are going to be putting him on your watch list. 15-teamers, NL only, pick him up. But very nice deeper league play right now as far as I see it. Let's get into some of the popular ads and drops of the day. The number one ad of the day is James Paxton. I saw this morning. I was like, oh my God, I got to talk about James Paxton again. But I get it. I mean, he's facing the White Sox. He's coming off of a couple of good starts in a row. It's tricky to ever recommend him because the stats below the surface with James Paxton are absolutely dreadful. They are some of the worst in all of baseball. And I think that even against a bad team like the White Sox, there's a chance that they are able to hit him up pretty good. A 3% strikeout minus walk rate, 518 on the xFIP. The Sierra is currently, where is this Sierra? I always lose the Sierra on Fangraphs pages. It's 543, though. It's absolutely horrendous. He's not striking guys out. Not that he was ever a big strikeout guy, but swinging strike rates down to 8%. Like, it's really bad. I shouldn't say he was never a big strikeout guy. There's a few seasons in the middle of his career where he was pretty good, but 15% strikeout rate right now. He's actually been fortunate, too, with his 237 BABIP. He's stranded 78% of base runners. This could get pretty ugly. Like, matchup-wise alone, yeah, you're streaming him in there. for the most part, but it's also a Monday in a head-to-head league. You can set yourself back quite a ways by having a James Paxton 6 or 7 earned run start to kick off your week. So while I think that he is viable, I wouldn't be rushing out of, you know, going out of my way to go pick up James Paxton. There are a lot of problems here. The only thing really going for him is that he pitches for the Dodgers, and it's a good chance if he throws 5 innings, he's getting a win. But there are potential, you know, a lot of things that could potentially go wrong here as well for James Paxton. Let's talk about Spencer Schwellenbach. Alec Burleson is the number 2 out of the day, but we just talked about him. So let's go on to Spencer Schwellenbach. He is starting against St. Louis. I like him okay, but again, this is more of a deeper league play for me, and Yahoo is mostly not deeper leagues. Yahoo, we say this all the time, it's 10s, it's 12s, the odd 15-team league. Maybe there's the odd-only league. For the most part, you're looking at 12-team guys, 10-team guys, and Spencer Schwellenbach hasn't really done much to show us that he deserves this. He had a good start last time against Detroit. Detroit stinks. I don't want to read too much into that. But it was a step in the right direction at the same time. And people want to take a chance against kind of a subpar offense in St. Louis. I get it. But I'm also not, again, I'm not running out of my way to go pick him up here. There is one pitcher I would be picking up, and we'll talk about him later on in the part of the two-star pitchers. But Spencer Schwellenbach, I just think there's still a lot to be accomplished there. There's still a lot of growth that he needs until I'm ready to just be picking him up all over the place. There's still a lot of risk in starting him anywhere. St. Louis, they're not that scary, but on a given night, we just talked about Burleson and Wynn. You know, Arenado and Goldschmidt can still give you production, although Arenado, I'm not sure if he's going to play. We're still kind of in flux there about his injury. It's a good team. It's not a great team, but they can get to you on a given night. Donovan, Arenado, Goldschmidt, Wynn, Burleson, whatever. There are pieces there that can hurt you, and that's why I think Schwellenbach is more of a deeper league play as opposed to somebody I'm picking up in 12-teamers. Aroldis Chapman is picked up in a lot of leagues today, more than 10,000 because of the news that David Bednar is going to be unavailable. Did they put David Bednar? I believe they put David Bednar on the IL yesterday. Let me just double check that because yesterday was a busy day. Yeah, so he did actually go on the IL. There was talk about he was going to be unavailable, but they actually made the move. Aroldis Chapman is a short-term add, I guess. But he's not somebody that I'm going to be investing a lot if you're talking about FAB or you're talking about a high waiver claim. He hasn't been very good this season. The ratios are bad. 4 ERA, 167 whip. You're getting a shitload of strikeouts, but we're talking about maybe 2 weeks for Bednar. Maybe if it's a, you know, bad injury, it's a little more delayed. And that's kind of the hope in these pickups. When you pick up a guy like Chapman, maybe Bednar's injury is worse than we think, and I get 10, 15 saves out of it. Doesn't sound like it's that serious with Bednar. I'd expect he's probably back in the next few weeks, and you get 3 saves out of Chapman or something. You get maybe, you know, 2 to 4 saves anywhere in that range, and he ends up helping you a little bit, but not really enough that it's worth using a significant chunk of your FAB on. So he's somebody that's kind of interesting, but also at the same time, not somebody I'm really going to be putting a hell of a lot of my chips into. Spencer Turnbull is going to be coming back into the Phillies rotation. Taiwan Walker went on the 15-day IL with some inflammation in his finger. So Spencer Turnbull is going to start against his old squad in Detroit on Wednesday. I think it's a good opportunity to use him. Like, he's been very, very good this season when he's been a starter. It was very frustrating that he left the rotation earlier on in the year. Talk about wasted FAB. But a 2.63 ERA with a 1.05 whip, 56 strikeouts and 51 and a third. I think this is a great streaming opportunity. And if you are looking for guys a day or two in advance, Turnbull's somebody you'd probably pick up tomorrow ahead of the frenzy on game day. I think that's a decent enough option. We're seeing people already kind of doing that. 9,000 ads today on Yahoo. I think that he is probably worth it. Again, very shallow leagues in those 10-teamers. Like I mentioned earlier, the guy who asked me about dropping Eflin for picking up Chris Sanchez, like, that guy can't stream. There's no streaming opportunity there, really, because who are you going to drop to stream? You're gonna put Sanchez or Eflin or Jared Jones on the wire to pick up a Schwellenbach or something for the day? Like, no, you can't. You're kind of just stuck with who you have, which is why sometimes when I'm saying, like, yeah, stream in shallow formats, stream in deeper formats, I try and get very specific, but I do acknowledge that there will be some of you who are like, Spencer Turnbull, like, my worst pitcher on the team is Bailey Ober, or it's Eflin, or it's Chris Sanchez, or it's whoever. I can't do it, and I get that some of you can't do it, but I do like to go through it here for those of you that can anyway. But let's talk about a couple more guys on the ad side before we get into the drops. Brandon Donovan, he's been really good over the last month. He's a top 100 player for the season as a whole, just outside of the top 200. We've talked about him a bunch recently. I think that he is a nice bench piece in deeper leagues. first, second, third outfield eligibility is gorgeous, but don't know that there's a hell of a lot of batting average upside. I think he can, in a perfect world, hit like 280 like he did last year. I don't know how likely that is to happen. You're also talking about pretty much no speed. Power is a bit better than it was, but he's also not leading off for St. Louis anymore. He's usually fifth or sixth in that order, sometimes even lower. So in your 10s and 12-team leagues, I don't think there's much of a move here with Brendan Donovan. If you're talking a deep 12 where there's big benches, you got extra corner and middle spots, utilities, five outfielders, that type of deal, that's where we start to have the conversation of, yeah, he's probably worth it. In those shallow leagues, again, I just don't really think I can get behind Brendan Donovan. Michael Lorenzen is also a popular ad. This is another one where you're kind of playing with fire a little bit. Michael Lorenzen has been pretty good, but he's not a great pitcher overall. It's more just, in my opinion, kind of just a nice stretch he's been having. And now he gets a tough matchup against Milwaukee to start the week. I'm not really that interested here. I understand if you want to stream it in deeper leagues, but not somebody I'm picking up in the shallow formats. Let's talk about Heston Kjerstad before we move into the drops. Orioles officially called him up today. Again, this is kind of like similar to the Blue Jays. I don't know if they're going to play him or not. They called the guy up when they did it before. I forget how long he was even up before, but it was like, what, a week or so? A couple of weeks. He had 14 total at-bats. He had two hits, sent him back down. Let's just see what he can do. Can we just, you're going to call him up. Can we stop playing these fucking games and we just see what these prospects can do? You call the guy up, sitting on the bench for a week, and you send him back down. Can we just either leave him in the minors or call him up to play regularly? Because the worst thing you can do for a 21, 22, 23-year-old guy developing is say, okay, you're going to take the week off now. You're going to have one pinch hit at bat in the seventh inning. You're going to come back out for a pinch runner or whatever. It's just stupid. Baltimore is not a stupid team. And they're in a bit of a roster crunch. And this is why, like, a common theme of mine for about the last year at least is that Baltimore needs to trade some of these prospects for pitching help. They have nowhere to play these guys, and that's why we're seeing these situations of, oh, Kjerstad's up, oh, he's down again tomorrow. Oh, Norby's up, oh, Norby's back down again tomorrow. Can we just stop with the games, let these guys play? I don't know what their plan is going to be. I would imagine they're not going to put him through this ringer again of, okay, Heston, you're back up with the team now, and then later this week it's, no, we're not going to play you, you're going back down to AAA. I would imagine that this time around they probably just let him play a little bit more, and if you have a free roster space, it's probably worth a speculative ad. The talent is just incredible, which is part of the reason why I'm saying just let the guy play. Like, just do it. Just let him play. Put him in the lineup. See what you got from him. We're talking about a guy who has 20 career games in the majors, 50 total plate appearances.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
He's not the youngest guy actually either. I thought he was like 23. He's 25 years old at this point. Why are you not just playing him? He's done everything that he can possibly do in the minor leagues. This season, 16 homers, 12% walk rate, 300 batting average, 150 WRC+. Stick him in the lineup, see what he can do. In terms of fantasy purposes, pick him up for now, see what the Orioles are going to do with him, because there's potential for a really nice, well-rounded asset here in a great lineup. But again, it's going to depend on what the Orioles do and if they're going to make this easy on us, and I suspect they won't, but I think he's worth a shot just to see what ends up happening. Let's move on to the drops. Jonathan Cannon kind of advised against this one last week. I didn't think it would be quite this bad, but my goodness, five earned runs, eight runs total on seven hits while striking out just one batter. He only made it one inning. This was pretty dreadful stuff. If this was your Sunday streamer, imagine you're down to your last ad of the week, and I know there'll be somebody who actually did this, so I don't want to pile on, but your last ad of the week, you pick up Cannon, you think, all right, he's done well against Houston and Seattle last couple times up. Surely he can do something against Detroit, right? Good chance he lost to your league there. there's just not a lot of upside in White Sox pitchers unless your name is Garrett Crochet or Eric Fetty. Cannon is pretty good, but he kind of, you know, got by on luck against Houston. It was a great – I don't want to take anything away from him, but that's not something you can expect from him going forward ever, really. Essentially a complete game, almost a Maddux. Like, I don't know how likely that was to continue. And the Seattle start before it, yeah, he ran up the strikeouts against a team that strikes out, like, just a crazy amount in Seattle. So on the show last week, we weren't reading too much into it, and we're reading even less into it now. If you're still holding him anywhere and he's still 12% rostered, I'd get him the hell out of here as soon as you can. There's just really not a lot that's going to happen for him in the major league level. Either it's going to be we see more of these bumps and bruises, or Mike Clevenger, when he comes back, takes that spot. I don't know what's going to happen, but either way, Jonathan Cannon is not an asset. Even in deeper leagues, I think you can probably drop him pretty easily. Javier Assad, I think it's time. I think it's time, guys, that you can probably just say, okay, in most cases, if you're in a 15-team league, you probably aren't dropping him. 10s and 12s, over the last month here, it's 33 strikeouts and 30 innings, a 5.40 ERA, 157 whip. There's not great team context. There's not great ballpark context. There's not a lot of strikeout upside. He's a guy who's kind of gotten by overrunning his advanced metrics for a couple of years. So I think if you are in those 10 and 12 team leagues, there's almost certainly a better option on your waiver wire than Javier Assad. I don't think he's somebody you need to hug too closely right now. Albert Suarez, I also think that it's kind of like he had a miracle run there for a while where he was just brilliant. Now we're seeing him start to come back to earth with the caveat that he's faced a couple tough opponents recently. Houston and New York are not easy matchups, to be sure. The Yankees and the Astros, that's really tough. He's lined up to face the Rangers in his next start. I think that I'd be okay starting him there, but like the Rangers are tricky. They haven't been doing great offensively, but all it takes is just one game for that to change. And Corey Seager and Garcia each had a couple bombs, and it can get pretty ugly. I think he's more of a deep league start for that one. I kind of need to see him prove it to me again after a couple of clunkers. Again, like it's not – I'm not going to say he stinks or anything because of these starts. He still has a 2.7 ERA, but he's more in a prove-it mode for me, more in the prove-it category again after he was kind of in like a must-start there for a while. Now I kind of want to see him do it before I'm putting him back in the lineups. Texas can be scary. If this was a matchup against the White Sox – if this was Oakland, if this was the Marlins, I'd be a lot more inclined. Texas is not on that level, but they're kind of just any given day type of team where they can beat you. It's a football phrase. Any given Sunday, any team, whatever. But any given day, that Rangers lineup can give you fits. And I think Suarez is probably okay. He's not somebody that I would be like, oh, yeah, you got to start him for that one. It might be in a 15-team league where you're going for it, 10s and 12s. I think it's a little bit too risky. Let's talk Jesus Luzardo. He's also a popular drop today, down 10% on Yahoo. He was moved to the 60-day IL. You never want to see this happen pretty much ever. They're calling it a lumbar stress reaction, 4 to 6 weeks. I think it's probably a reasonable drop here with Luzardo. Hadn't really got going much this season. We hadn't seen any strikeouts from him, which had been really frustrating. Only 58 strikeouts in 66 innings, but also a 5 ERA, a 125 whip. He had been bad. He had just been bad for you. Now you're dealing with an injury where he's going to be out at least 6 weeks. And whenever I hear these, we talked about this recently, actually. Whenever you hear 6 weeks, it's best to just tell yourself 7 or 8. You hear a month, tell yourself 5 or 6 weeks. All that can happen is you're pleasantly surprised if they come back before then, and it usually doesn't happen. Pitcher with a back injury, 6 weeks from now, like we're pretty much July at this point. 6 weeks from now, assuming all goes well, we're getting him in the middle of August. So you're talking about 6 weeks from that point, and you got to hope that Luzardo's able to give you good production after not having done well to start the season, after getting hurt and getting shut down. And you got to think, the Miami team, you think it looks bad now, that team is going to look pretty dreadful by the time they sell off some pieces. Maybe it is a Jesus Sanchez that goes. Maybe it's a couple other guys. But they're awful now before they really get into selling mode. I can't imagine that there's going to be many win opportunities for a guy like Luzardo should he come back and down the stretch. And that's assuming he comes back on the minimum timeline and we're getting him back in 6 weeks, which almost never happens. If we're going to be realistic about it, it's probably 8 weeks, which means first week of September for Luzardo, which means I'm not really worried about holding him there. If you don't have an IL space, it's an easy drop. free IL space, then I guess it doesn't hurt to throw him in there. But I can't imagine many teams just have an empty IL right now. I think, as crazy as it sounds, in most leagues, he's probably a drop. I really like Jesus Luzardo. It's a bad, bad, bad season for him. Hopefully we get back on the horse next year. But 2024 for Luzardo was an unmitigated disaster, and I think it's probably time to just cut him and move on at this point. Before I let you guys out of here, I just want to highlight my four favorite two-start pitchers of the week, guys who you're still seeing on a lot of Yahoo waiver wires. Number one has got to be my boy Taj Bradley for a number of reasons. One, he's only on 50% of rosters. Plus, when you're looking at the matchups, Seattle and Washington, it's kind of a dream two-start week if you're able to find him. Odds are you're still finding him because people are just not interested in Taj Bradley for whatever reason. Let them leave him on the wire. Pick him up for this nice two-start week. I think it's a fantastic, fantastic set of matchups, and he should do very, very well. Matt Waldron, Washington and Boston, 57% on you. Actually, he's gone up today into the low 60s with the Washington start tonight. But he's still generally pretty available for somebody who has been so good. Matt Waldron, if you look back over the last month, it's kind of easy for it to have fallen through the cracks or whatever, but he's number 13 player overall for the last month. 3 wins, 24 strikeouts, a 1.35 ERA, and a 0.75 whip. He has been incredible. Matchup against Washington for sure is a go. If you're in a daily league, you can kind of play it by ear and see if you want to start him for the Boston one, because that is a lot more challenging. But I think right now, the way he's pitching, he's pretty much a must-start pitcher for the time being. Brandon Pfaadt gets Minnesota and Oakland. He's on about 65, 66% of rosters. It's a little trickier with Minnesota there, but Oakland in and of itself, like, that probably makes it worth it. Minnesota is one of those teams I mentioned, like Texas. They're not overly scary as a whole, but on a night-to-night basis, there's guys in that lineup that can really thump you, so that one's a little scarier. I think Brandon Pfaadt, you know, I did a long write-up on him on Patreon over the weekend. I think he's really good, and I think there's a potential we see some more strikeouts unlocked down the stretch. Certainly going forward, I think, like, if you're talking Dynasty, he's a great buy. But for this week, Minnesota and Oakland, I think that's pretty solid enough where you're starting him in most 12-teamers and beyond. And then this is one that's a little more reserved for the deeper leagues, and it's pretty much strictly matchup dependent, but it's Griffin Canning. I know, as soon as I say it, you probably just threw up in your mouth a little bit. But versus Oakland, versus Detroit, I mean, it's strictly matchup-based. What he's done this year is not good. I added him in one or two 15-teamers myself for $10, $15 a fab out of a $1,000 budget. So about 1% of my budget I spent on him. And I think just based on the matchups, there's a decent enough chance it goes well where in those deeper formats, you're like, okay, what do I have in my 15-teamers? It's between trash and slightly less trash. So, you know, you're picking up a guy like Griffin Canning, hoping for the best here, but that one is not specifically, but more so recommended in deeper leagues. If you're starting him in a 10 or a 12, we should say a prayer for you tonight. But that is going to do it for us, guys. Really appreciate all you guys coming on, listening to the show here over the first, I guess we're into the couple month phase now. We started in May 10th of the first show, something like that. So having a lot of fun doing the show every day. We've been doing them longer than I was doing them before as well. Just really having fun behind the mic again. You guys should check me out over on Twitter, at JoeOrico99. You got any questions or whatever, do send them to me over there. I do answer most of my questions through Patreon now because there's just a lot going on Twitter. My inbox is kind of flooded over there. So do check out the Patreon link in the description of the episode. You're looking for more work from me, just trying to help support the cause. If you're looking to do something that doesn't cost anything, do leave a rating and review on the show. That really helps us here get the numbers up, boost the algorithm, and do all those things behind the scenes at Apple and Spotify that shoot this podcast out to different people. All that is very much appreciated. Just to remind you again, James Anderson is joining me tomorrow for a prospect pitching episode. We're going to go over not just prospects, we're going to talk about some rookies as well and kind of just go through what we've seen in 2024, what we expect going forward as well. Luis Gil, we'll touch on Paul Skeens, Ben Brown, Jarrett Jones, Christian Scott, Hurston Waldrop, Max Meyer. Lots of players we're going to talk about, so make sure you are checking that one out tomorrow afternoon. But until then, everybody, take care. Have a great night.